Trash Video is your one-stop video shop in Sleazoid City.
Who the fuck is that dickhead?
I don't know.
We have the best rental stock of horror, cult, B-grade movies available on VHS.
Movies with corpse rape? Oh, let me get set.
Blu-ray? Fuck that shit! VHS!
Faces of Death is a family film.
Our professional, friendly, and knowledgeable staff are here to help you.
Hey, Roxy, after the shift, you wanna go watch a porno with me?
Shut up, Seth, I'm doing my nails.
So stop on by the store today.
I smell like overheated in here.
Ballet's here, a crazy new year to you.
Happy new year to you. I'm going to commit murder at midnight.
Well, we're really off to an interesting start, aren't we?
3, 2, 1. All right. It's 1983. Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
And now for our feature presentation.
Trash Video Podcast.
So, I don't know, maybe like a week or two ago, I live in Nebraska, and this was some big news, I guess. Well, not big news, kind of just funny news out of Omaha. And this might just only happen in Omaha. Sheep found wearing Christmas sweater, finally reunited with family.
Aww.
You remember that one?
Yes.
A sheep wearing a festive red and green sweater who was found wandering around Omaha has been reunited with his owner. Nebraska Humane Society spokeswoman Pam West says someone reclaimed the sheep named Gage Tuesday evening. So, Gage, I guess he shares a shed with two chickens.
Aw. Do you think he ran away because they put that sweater on him?
Try to get away from these evil people.
Yeah, like these people are fucking crazy.
Yeah, the owner doesn't know how Gage got loose, but because of Facebook, people were knew about it and looked out for this little sheep guy. So Gage is used to walking on a leash and doesn't seem to mind the holiday apparel, but he is back with his family. So that's good news for sheep all around the world.
Yeah. At least it wasn't dressed in lingerie or something. <You know? laughs>
No, it might have stumbled across the wrong person and fallen victim to something.
Something tragic. Okay, so in Amsterdam, a Dutchman attempts a romantic wedding proposal. Did you hear about this?
Mm-mm. Did you hear about this?
A guy who was not identified, okay, rented a crane, and then he was planning to descend in the crane in front of his girlfriend's bedroom window first thing in the morning. Then he was going to play her like a song and pop the question to her, okay? But instead, the crane toppled over, smashing a large hole in the neighbor's roof. The man climbed out to safety, so no one was actually injured. And apparently the girlfriend did say yes. After they talked to police, they took off to Paris, though, to celebrate their, you know, impending wedding. So that left the cleanup to be done, and the crane fell again during the attempts to get it off of the neighbor's house with a larger crane, so it kind of bashed in the rest of the roof.
Of their neighbor's house.
Yeah. And the mayor declared the building unsafe. There were also, and this was like an apartment building, so there were 6 other apartments that had to be evacuated while these 2 assholes went to Paris.
Yeah, that's like the most douchebaggiest fucking way to go about that. Like, they should sell their wedding rings now.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Because do you get insured for that?
About 30,000 people bought a hot steaming pile of shit this Black Friday, courtesy of Cards Against Humanity. The folks behind the Madcap card game, which bills itself as a party game for terrible people, offered to send people actual bullshit in a special offer last month. The company explicitly said that anyone who bought the $6 holiday bundle would expect to open a box full of live bull poop. Like actual shit from a bull.
Yeah.
Cards Against Humanity has pulled clever holiday pranks in the past, including 2013's 12 Weeks of Holiday Bullshit. That in fact may have fueled internet rumors that this year's special package contained more of the same, or even a limited edition of the game. The contents of the box appears to be dry and largely... Wait. I hate how articles start good and then just go into poop. People are reportedly reselling the boxed poop on eBay for up to 5 times the sticker price. Others panicked and wrote frantic emails to Cards Against Humanity asking for their money back because they thought it would be like a card game, but it's an actual box of shit, and people are freaking out. And the reason why people are having a hard time reselling it is because it's illegal to send feces to people via U.S. mail for the purpose of harassment.
Yeah, I actually just thought of that.
It's for the purpose of harassment. If it's like just a gift, you know, like a funny thing, then it's different, I guess. But if you're trying to pull like a pink flamingo, it's not gonna, might end up badly for you.
This story is entitled Man Tells Police Secret Documents Are Stolen. Okay, so this took place in Georgia. A LaGrange man told police Tuesday his home was burglarized and someone had stolen paperwork revealing the identity of code names belonging to high-ranking government officials. The man told police he has a machine that converts thoughts into radio frequencies that can be sent as messages to other people's brains. Mm-hmm. He told police that the names on the stolen documents were that of FBI agents and NASA astronauts. The man also told police whoever came into his house had to know what they were looking for because of the dangerous nature of the code names written on the paper. The man said he needed a police report so that he could document this incident in order to get in touch with the FBI and NASA to inform them, you know, that there was a leak. He was worried that someone might gain control of the subject's minds using their code names. So the police didn't really see any visible signs of any burglary. But they did issue a filed report. So we should feel safer now.
Well, it just kind of sounds like somebody skipped their medication day.
Yeah, pretty much.
You might want to be locked up.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The police shouldn't have filed the report. They just should have carted that dude away.
Yeah, put him in a room with soft walls.
And a nice jacket that gives hugs.
So, it being New Year's, and I figured I'd read a few facts about New Year's and some traditions around the world. In the United States, obviously, a kiss at the stroke of midnight signifies the purification into the new year, which that doesn't really make sense to me, because what if the person you're kissing has, like, cold sores? It's not really pure. And making deafening noise is said to drive away evil spirits. In England, the first guest to arrive at the home is believed to hold their good fortune. They believe it should be a man bearing gifts such as coal for the fire or a loaf of bread for the table. The guest will enter through the front door and exit out the back. Any guest who shows up empty-handed or unwanted will not be allowed to enter the home first. So they just stand outside in the cold.
Loser.
In Japan, they decorate their homes for the new year with pine branches symbolizing longevity, bamboo stock symbolizing prosperity, and plum blossom showing nobility. That's a lot of abilities and evities. Greece and Norway also having similar traditions. In Greece, they bake a bread with a coin inside, and if the third slice has the coin, it is said that spring will be early that year. Norwegians make rice pudding with one whole almond, and whoever serves Whoever's serving holds the almond is guaranteed wealth that year. Lots of food-related traditions. In Sicily, lasagna is served on New Year's Day because any other noodle served is said to bring bad luck. China. As most people already know, the Chinese New Year is not on January 1st, but they still celebrate old traditions to ring in their new start. Every front door is painted with a fresh coat of red paint, symbolizing good luck and happiness. Also, families prepare feast without using knives. All knives are put away for 24 hours to keep anyone from cutting themselves because it is thought to cut the family's good luck for the year. So, that's a little weird. Anyway, so that's just a few holiday tradition stuff, you know.
Well, we have do you have like a local tradition?
No. Really, yes, it's just people going downtown at the bars and stuff, not really anything crazy.
Well, we have like a local food tradition. We have the New Year's pretzel.
I know how you like your pretzels.
Yeah, well, it's more of like a pastry pretzel because it's got icing on it and like cherries and maybe nuts or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you eat it for breakfast on New Year's Day. I don't know. It's just a tradition around here.
It's not for like luck or anything though, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. All of that stuff is. Yeah. That's, you know, the representation of it, but it's just, I didn't know. I only found out like a few years ago that that wasn't like a tradition everywhere in the U.S. You know, it was just like a localized thing.
Well, I take that back. Actually, my tradition is working in the fucking kitchen while the ball drops. Been doing that for 3 years now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's New Year's stuff.
Yeah.
Here's what the critics are saying about the new Tour de Force podcast, Pool Party Radio. Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post says, "At its core, this clever, wrenching, profound story underscores the tenacity of faith in the face of unfathomable cruelty." Tom Long of the Detroit News says, "Frisbee is a delight, playing Dowdy instead of his standard Regal, and Parker is appropriately droll and disillusioned. Together they manage to make a sad story feel somehow bright." Chicago Sun-Times, Bill Zwecker says, "A lesser podcast could so easily have turned this project into mushy, sentimental junk. The tear-jerking moments here are heartfelt and real. It's the kind of podcast we see too little of today." Isn't it about time you've checked out Pool Party Radio? Found online at poolpartyradio.com or by searching on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Remember, it's the number one podcast about the awfulness of being alive.
Michelle and I extend our warmest wishes to you and your families for a sweet and happy new year. My good friend Elie Wiesel once said that God gave human beings a secret, and that secret was not how to begin, but how to begin again. These days of awe are a chance to celebrate that gift. Give thanks for the secret, the miracle of renewal. Above all, let's embrace this God-given miracle of renewal, this extraordinary opportunity to begin again in pursuit of justice, prosperity, and peace. From my family to yours.
Oh, yeah, you sell pickles?
I'm sorry, do we sell what?
Pickles.
No, we don't.
Oh, damn. I could have sworn you guys used to sell pickles here. Where are your blank cassette tapes at?
We don't sell those either.
Really? Well, what about batteries?
Nope.
Greeting cards?
Sir, this is a video rental store.
So?
Hey, sexy. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Do you know what I want you to give me? Some really good positive feedback. On iTunes, of course. We really need your 5-star reviews. Don't you want to give it to me?
Son of a bitch. I'm supposed to be there before 10.
Hey, don't get uptight.
What?
So what if we're a few minutes late? Do you know what you need?
What?
TM. transcendental meditation. Listen, I do it every morning. Boy, actually, this stuff really works. I stopped biting my nails. Lisa got rid of her nervous diarrhea.
Sally, please.
Oh. You can change if you really want to bad enough.
Boy, whatever comes into your head comes right out of your mouth.
No, you're exactly the sort of girl I was hoping to meet in a place like that.
You know, TM, TA, Zen, all that don't mean doodly bee squat. When a girl doesn't have a date on New Year's Eve, she's in shit city.
Well, Happy New Year's, Roxy.
Happy New Year.
You know, with doing this podcast, it's given me the opportunity to watch and learn about tons of movies that I maybe have seen mentioned in passing, but never actually sat down and watched, even back in, like, the glorious video store days. So up until a few months ago, I'd never seen Christmas Evil or Nuki or Dead Time Stories. Really, I don't know, each episode is kind of a chance for me to get another horror cult classic underneath my belt, you know?
Right.
And so this time, I watched the 1988 canon production of New Year's Evil, directed by Emmett Alston, who also directed Demon Warp.
Hold it. You said 1988. Isn't it 1980?
Did I say 1988?
You did.
1980. Canon production of New Year's Evil.
Okay, I thought I was crazy for a minute.
No. And the same director did Demon Warp, which has a...
Yeah, I know
I
that
think
one.
It's like an alien Bigfoot movie.
I remember the box from that.
He also wrote Hunter's Blood, which is like a personal favorite of mine with the whole... It's like kind of a hillbilly backwoods movie.
I love hillbillies.
Yeah. Mother's Day and, you know, movies like that. So it's New Year's, of course, and it's the early 80s, and the whole punk scene is flourishing in the streets of Los Angeles. Immediately, we're hit with the movie's rock theme song, and it's actually pretty sweet in, like, a really bad way. I also like when a horror film comes up with their original songs, you know.
I know. They're usually laughable.
Yeah. And this one's, like I said, it's really bad, but in a good way. Anyway, our lead middle-aged punk actress is a radio personality and rock star named Blaze, played by Roz Kelly. And she does a pretty good job in this movie, although I think she was maybe miscast, because when you think of punk, you think of, like, a younger person.
Yeah.
And even in, like, you know, I don't know when punk started, but she's like a middle-aged punk woman in 1980.
Right.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense. I guess she could have become a punk, like, in her 40s or something. But she's hosting a live New Year's late-hour countdown celebration with bands, tunes, punks, call-ins, the whole deal. It's a very cool party vibe in the room. Everyone is out to have a good time. Lots of cool party lighting and youngsters moshing and bumping into each other like zombies. It's seriously like the people cast as extras just flop around in this little mosh pit area, and it's really pretty awkward most moments, but it's pretty fucking funny too. Like, it just stands out how kind of non-acting these people are. It's like they just showed up and the director's like, just act like a fucking douchebag. In this shot, we're gonna get a close-up of you. Act like a fucking asshole. I don't know. It's kind of funny. It's almost New Year's on the East Coast, and during the call-in portion of the show, a crazy guy calls in from a payphone somewhere outside the building. Using a voice changer, he tells Blaze that he will murder one female each time the New Year's strikes across the country. You know, through the different time zones. Which is a pretty original and interesting way to do things. You know, I never heard of a horror movie doing that before. So, you know, when it strikes midnight on the East Coast, that's a kill. And then you have Central Time Zone, that's a kill. And then you have Mountain Time. And then West Coast. He asks Blaze to call him Evil. And that he will start murdering people she knows and people that are close to her. All of this is broadcast live over the New Year's show and piques the audience interest, even though the punks just keep dancing like idiots, like bumping into each other. And you should see me as we're recording this. I'm like moving around, dancing like they are. Anyway.
I'm glad that I can't see you, but okay.
Through all this, Blaze has a lonely actor son who is supposed to be 18 or 19, but looks like he's in his late 20s. And is ignored by his celebrity mother. We also learn that Blaze's estranged husband has already gotten wasted and is unable to make the show, which I guess is nothing new, the way she kind of responds to the news. It's like it always happens. Blaze would rather like pay attention to her career and manager than deal with her actual family. And so we have kind of a tension there. So we're introduced to the crazy asshole murderer going by Evil. And like I mentioned before, it's almost the new year on the East Coast, so the killing must commence. What I like about this movie and some other titles, the killer's face is shown like almost right away. And it's you know, it's not a guessing game type of horror film because it has a little bit more to offer than just a quick, stupid reveal at the end of the movie. Like, aha, it was him all along. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first time watching this, I'm like, Jesus, like they literally, the first scene this killer has, his face is just right there in front of you. And I don't think a lot of movies do that anymore. But anyway, so our killer sneaks into a psychiatric hospital, which is found out later he's actually spent time in. So he's back for a little vengeance. He's got his trusty tape recorder. And if you've ever seen the box art for New Year's Evil, you immediately know what his weapon of choice is. It's that little switchblade he has, which isn't a bad choice. Also a switchblade used in New York Ripper, I believe, and that's a good movie. Anyway, he sneaks into a room, somehow avoiding all of the night nurses, and puts on some hospital scrubs, and proceeds on finding his first victim of the night. And it doesn't take long to get the first girl in the back room with a bottle of champagne and the ball dropping. Don't do your nails.
What?
Oh my god. Ball dropping in New York playing over the radio. He tells this nurse that he's at the hospital to help for the night, and it seriously just takes a minute to get this blonde hottie in the room alone with him. And nearly topless on an office table. It's the new year on the East Coast, and the switchblade is buried into the sexed up nurse. It's one of those shots that don't show the knife actually penetrating, but we see the knife going up and down, and more blood gets on the blade and on his hand.
And that's
a bit weak, but it's edited together with shots of people with those like party blower things and kazoos, and so each time the knife goes down, it'll like cut to somebody like, you know, so that, I don't know. So it gets a pass in my book. That was kind of creative. And by the way, I'm going to leave that doing your nails thing in the show. Because that's pretty funny.
I figure.
So mission accomplished. Evil has gone through with the first murder of the new year and calls back into Blaze's countdown celebration and plays the tape live over the air. And, I forgot to mention that Evil records the sounds of his murders on tape, on his little tape recorder, so he can call into Blaze's show and play it for everyone watching. Anyways, so now Blaze is exceedingly more worried. Cops are called in the entire hotel, and the party is being held in a quarantine zone until the New Year's murderer is found. But is he already in the hotel? I don't know. Nope, he's not. He's not. he's putting on a mustache to disguise himself and is already stalking his victim at a seedy dive bar. This guy must, I don't know, either he like really hates blondes or really loves them, because that's all he's killing in this movie. And, is blondes. And I don't blame him, though. You know, I thoroughly enjoy a smoking hot blonde, right, Roxy? But this blonde is, like, super annoying, and just like the first victim, it takes just 5 minutes to get her to leave with him. This time, though, his lie is that he's a business manager for Eric Estrada. New Year's Evil was made in 81, so... Well, 80, I think. So his show Chips was super hot shit still back then, until it was canceled in 83. Anyways, that was Eric Estrada talk. So... He asks her to come over to Mr. Estrada's house party, and her being the bimbo that she is, of course she says yes. You know, Evil's got like 10 minutes to get this broad out of the bar, into his car, and murder her before the central time zone starts celebrating the ball drop. Plus, this chick is like super annoying, so you must root for the murderer to just do it in the bar.
Right.
She brings a friend with her, so now we're set up for a double kill. She wants her friend to come along because she's not stupid enough to go out with just a stranger by herself. So she's going to bring her friend to die with her. They make a pit stop at a liquor store for some more champagne. This guy loves champagne. He gives blonde number two some money to get the largest bottle they have. So now it's just Evil and this bar bimbo number one in the car. He asks her if she'd like to get high real quick in the parking lot.
You're here?
And she says sure.
Me again, gentlemen.
So he reaches down to pick up a plastic bag with like a ton of pot in it. And like a huge bag full of green stuff. And he asks her to take a whiff because it's supposedly really good shit. And as soon as she hovers her head over the bag, Evil puts it over her face and starts suffocating the poor girl in weed. Now... This might be the only death by pot kills I've ever seen in a movie, and I was laughing out loud when I saw this, like...
I think the diary is back!
Hey, you wanna smoke a number?
Seven,
six, I got some great five, stuff here. Four, Columbia.
Three,
here. Two, smell.
One.
Pretty great, because you can see the pot in the bag getting pushed into her face while she's suffocating, and it's just kind of funny. I bet the director thought it was hilarious too, because it's like, I don't know, it looks like they were having a good time on set, and it was just kind of like a weed joke, like a weed horror joke. Mm-hmm. Like the writer's probably like, nobody's ever died of pot before, well, let's work this kill into the movie. Yeah. Anyway, so death by pot, we get that. Mm-hmm. And then Bimbo number two is killed soon after. Back to Blaze's show, and the second and third murder are played over the air. This time the cops are recording the call and trying to trace the call, and things are really kind of tightening up for everyone. The cops, Blaze, Evil. It all feels like the pieces are kind of coming together, and this movie's coming to a head. And I've got a burp. We've got the Mountain Time New Year's murder first, though, then the final act of the movie. So this is the area of the movie that really sold me. The cops are moving in closer and closer to Evil, so he's got to be more careful about some things, but some things you just can't control. And Evil's now dressed as a pastor. He's a man of the cloth. And once again, it's kind of something in the movie that's cool and different. So anyway, he's a pastor driving around downtown LA looking for his next victim, just in time for the ball to drop in Mountain Time. A gang of bikers ride up on his car at a red light and start harassing him, flipping him off, and doing biker stuff. So Evil gets distracted by the radio, hearing that the police are now searching for a spree killer in the city. The light turns green, and a little down the road, Evil accidentally crashes into the back of a bike. And anyone that's ever seen a biker movie knows that that's a bad idea. So now the bikers are after him, and the movie almost turns into like an action film for a bit with the chase. And another thing that happens that I really enjoy, Evil rolls into an old drive-in movie theater to try and escape the gang. And we get like, you know, the movies within the movie shit here, you know, playing on the big screen. One of the trailers we see and hear is for Blood Feast. But it didn't look like Horsion for Blood Feast, but it didn't look like the Herschel Gordon Lewis movie. So I was a bit confused at the time, and come to find out, the scenes were from a movie called The Lady in Red Kills Seven Times from 1972, but it was paired with the audio from Blood Feast. So they kind of, I don't know, it's kind of strange. But so I always like that when they have a movie that you recognize within a movie that you don't recognize. So, So within this drive-in, we get our first and only boob shot from a young kids making out in a car. And of course, it's a blonde and her boyfriend. And the boyfriend is nagging for sex while she smokes a joint. The bikers know the make of Evil's car, so he rips open the door of the kid's car, throws the kid out, and takes off with the blonde in the back seat. So Evil manages to peel out of the drive-in, but not before blasting through a makeshift roadblock consisting of a motorcycle and a rest-in-peace second motorcycle. He does get away from the bikers, though, and we get a nice chase scene through some woods with a drive-in blonde, so the movie turns into a bit of a stalk and slash for a little bit. But this time, the blonde lives because the cops are, like, fast on Evil's tail and literally at times just moments away from capturing him, so she escapes with her life, and we move on to the final act of the movie. I think early on with this show, I was really bad at just spoiling movies. You know, I've kind of lately I've just been setting it up for people, and then they can finish it. So I don't want to spoil the end at all, but we find out that people aren't who they appear, and sort of seeing the killer's face and who he is and what he's doing this whole time up until the end, it makes the payoff worth it, like totally worth it. It all wraps up real nice with not really a twist, but a turn. It's really fun and keeps things interesting. Blaze is freaking out more and more each death that takes place. Her weird lonely son is turning into an almost like a dandy character from American Horror Story.
Yeah.
And so I like him. He's pretty good. The drunk husband may show up, and it's a bit of a change on kind of the who's done it genre. We get one pair of boobs, switchblade foo, elevator foo, brick foo, dumpster foo, death by marijuana, dead blondes posed up for cops in a park, glorious 80s punk, awesome soundtrack, one car chase, one police shootout, pantyhose masks, a biker gang out for blood, movie within a movie, pill popping, fake dummy falling, and a terrible early 80s hair and fashion.
Dude.
Now, this one might go into rotation around the New Year's for me. It's that enjoyable. It has different kind of energy than a lot of the other slashers I've seen have. So, if you haven't tried this one out before, give it a go. It's available on YouTube, if you're a cheapskate, and also DVD and Blu-ray from Scream Factory. So,
it's also a free download on Dish Network, if anybody has that, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So don't dare make a New Year's resolution unless you plan to live.
Dun, dun, dun.
New Year's Evil 1980 from canon.
Yay. There,
I thought I did pretty okay.
I told you would like that one better than the other.
Yeah, I really liked it. You know, it's just weird kind of sitting down in your apartment on a Monday afternoon watching a New Year's slasher, but I enjoyed it.
I'm mad. This is how you act when you are out of control. I don't want to ever see my mother have to go through this again. Never, Jeffrey. Jeffrey! I hate you, motherfucker!
Trash Video Podcast is available all over the internet. Please check out our website at www.trashvideopodcast.com.
Okay, let's go through it one more time. When my watch says that it's 12 o'clock, that column is going to light up.
Okay.
Then this big 83 is going to light up.
Yeah.
This rocket hits the pad. Max steps out, he says, Happy New Year. Then we hit the flash pots, the fireworks, the balloons. What happened to the flash pots?
The control panel fucked up, Neil.
Well, fix it.
Oh, anything you say, lover. got you that time, you little worm.
So we're sticking with the New Year's theme. I reviewed a movie called Get Crazy from 1983. Mm-hmm. So here is the summary. It's December 31st, 1982. The small but historic Saturn Theater is preparing for its big New Year's Eve concert. The guy who owns the Saturn Theater is named Max. And the club would be comparable to like a CBGB's in New York or the Whiskey in California, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like an intimate place, has a reputation for launching the careers of musicians. So it's kind of like the celebrated venue. Max runs the theater with his heart, okay?
Okay.
Because his motto is that every concert at the Saturn means that the audience can see the stage, afford the tickets, and hear the music. But there is an evil concert promoter. And he plans to sabotage the New Year's Eve event.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And he seems to be succeeding, too, because Max ends up in the hospital. So now the staff of the Saturn Theater have to pull off probably the biggest event that it's ever known. There's romance, sex, drugs, rock and roll. There's also slapstick comedy, crazy musicians, a massive party, and a joke probably every 60 seconds. Things definitely get crazy in this movie. So, Get Crazy was directed by Alan Arkush.
Wait, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Things definitely get crazy. So, Get Crazy... I got it. I'm sorry. It took a minute. Sorry.
Get Crazy was directed by Alan Arkush, who also directed Rock and Roll High School. It is not on DVD, and the circulation of it on VHS was rather low. So for those who do know the movie, it's considered a cult classic because it's very weird and it's very rare. Mm-hmm. This is yet another movie I know about due to having much older brothers who are definitely in the cult of its fans. So, let me stress the weirdness of the movie. I'm going to give you a few tidbits here. Get Crazy has an ensemble cast. We've got Malcolm McDowell, who plays a coked-out, egotistical Mick Jagger type of character. Lee Ving, who plays a masochist punk rock lead singer, pretty much like his real life, as the lead singer of the band Fear. Ed Begley Jr., who plays the evil concert promoter. Lou Reed, who plays an eccentric Bob Dylan slash Lou Reed kind of character. Daniel Stern from Home Alone, who plays one of the stage managers, and he kind of is the hero of the movie. Mm-hmm. And we also have tons of cameos. You've got Paul Bartel, Mary Warnoff, Dick Miller, Clint Howard,
Jesus,
Bobby Sherman, Fabian, and Linnea Quigley in an uncredited extra role in the audience.
Wow, that's some heavy hitters there, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Get Crazy is basically a parody. So the joke is on everything from rock musicians to their lifestyles to drug use in the 80s and so on. It parodies every kind of imaginable human behavior you can think of. Attitudes, belief systems, so on and so on. The setup of the movie takes place over the first 30 minutes. And my summary pretty much covers that setup. The next hour is just bizarre concert performances and 80s party comedy. Switching pages.
Kind of, it sounds like you have really heavy paper.
Probably, because it's from the printer. Okay. The humor is over the top. It's extremely exaggerated. And it's relentless. Like I said, it's nothing but joke after joke everywhere you turn. And it's super fast paced. 60 seconds doesn't go by without some kind of joke. And you get every type of comedy. that you can imagine. You know, there's like lowbrow humor, highbrow humor, sight gags, dry humor.
Almost sounds like a trauma movie or something.
Yeah, in a way. Nothing is politically correct in it either. Forget it. Mm. Even the set pieces are used in the jokes. Okay, they're kind of part of the comedy. The story itself, it's pretty average. But it's the absurdity of the movie that makes it all work and makes it fun. It reminds me of the movie Airplane, or maybe even like the Naked Gun movies, if they had crammed more jokes into those movies. It's one of those silly comedies that if you keep watching it, you know, you will continue to catch different jokes. You'll see more details that you missed. The soundtrack is pretty cool too. It includes some Ramones songs. All of the actors perform their own vocals, including Malcolm McDowell. So if you ever wanted to hear little Alex sing, this is your chance.
Oh my. Or you could just watch Clockwork Orange, doesn't he sing?
Well, yeah. Yeah, but he's not singing rock and roll.
No.
He's not playing Mick Jagger.
It's true.
I believe it's probably the music rights that are keeping it from being released on DVD, and from what I read, it's not going to be released anytime soon. But of course, I'm not sure. The reviews on IMDb often compare Get Crazy to Rock and Roll High School or Spinal Tap, but I think Get Crazy is far weirder. For instance, okay. Malcolm McDowell gets high, and he starts having conversations with his penis. And eventually, he dubs his penis the new manager of his band.
Nice.
Yeah. There's also the character of Electric Larry. He's a cowboy hat-wearing outer space-like robot who delivers drugs anytime someone asks for them.
What's the aspirin? Cortisone. Suppositories.
Take those.
Nothing here we can use. We got too much work and not much time, man. And what we need is something that's gonna blast us into the fast lane.
Electric Larry. Just in time.
There are explosions, fires, blowtorches, poodle abuse, skull slamming, a toxic male men's bathroom, car chases, and a bomb threat. But the show must go on, and it does. As I said, you know, this movie's not available on DVD. I did find it uploaded on YouTube, where you can check it out if you want. So if you need something else that's fun and weird for your New Year's Eve party, Get Crazy just might hit the spot. There's so much that could be said about this too, by the way. My review is really kind of basic. There's just so much detail and tons of trivia, you know, with the movie. So check it out, look it up on IMDb. There's some interesting stuff there, like about Malcolm McDowell not knowing he was supposed to have a conversation with his penis in the movie. He didn't read that in the script, like he just kind of accepted the part and didn't find out until it was like, shooting time.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of like weird stuff. But it's a great spoof, and it's up there with, like I said, Airplane, because I just happened to watch Airplane again over the weekend. And you forget, like, how it's a movie that's been around for so long and everybody knows it. And you sort of forget, like, how funny it actually is.
Don't call me Shirley.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? I always mix up this line. It's like, Billy, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
But you forget like how funny it is until you're confronted with it again.
Yeah.
And that's a lot like Get Crazy. You know, I forgot how much I liked the movie until I watched it again.
Well, definitely sounds interesting. You always come up with these movies that I've never even heard of. So I can appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, that's my thing. Yeah. And by the way, the key words here. On IMDb, concert, drugs, one night, groupie, cameo, talking penis.
Nice.
Yeah, So, it's weird.
He's gotta be depressed working on New Year's Eve. You know what? I'm gonna invite him to this party.
Everyone's depressed on New Year's Eve.
Kevin, only you are depressed on New Year's Eve. I'm having a great time, see?
The drinking, the fighting, the loving the lady.
What are you talking about?
It's the obligation to enjoy yourself. No, that's what does it. Every year it's the same desperate scrambling around, surround yourself with as many people as possible, go to some stupid party, pretend to be happy, when really, your girlfriend just left you and you have no career.
Are you gonna be like this all night?
Yeah.
On the next episode, yeah, we don't have anything prepared, so just fucking show up, please.
Hey everybody, it's your fearless editor Seth here. Just wanted to thank Corey of Illogical Contraption for the use of music and all that good shit. Obama for the low gas prices. Florida for all the weird news. And all the trash video podcast fans. It's 2015. Let's make it a good one, guys. Alright, see ya.